Get 12 weeks of The Spectator in print and online for just £12. And we'll give you a £20 Amazon gift voucher, absolutely free. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Katie Balls and I'm joined by Fraser Nelson and Kate Andrews. So I've had the news today that UK government debt has risen above £2 trillion for the first time amid heavy spending to support the economy through coronavirus. Fraser, this is a surprising figure. It's the direction we knew we were heading in.
Oh, very much so. But nonetheless, it is extraordinary. Even words like trillion are not words you're really used to using. I doubt many people could tell you how many zeros are in a trillion. And I guess the other significant figure is that it's over 100% of GDP for the first time. This takes us into a club of rather highly indebted countries. And it's funny, we're sitting here, Katie, with a book right behind you called This Time is Different by Reinhardt and Rogoff. That book came out about 10 years ago, where they basically argue that once national debt gets above a certain threshold, like 80, 90%, then companies really struggle to get back on the straight and narrow. Now, since then, you've seen the rise of new monetary theory and the idea that the Reinhardt and Rogoff theory doesn't really work, and that what matters now is not the debt, it's the debt interest. So this is the other crucial thing we need to discuss when we're talking about a national debt. See, back 10 years ago, it was argued that if a government got out of control with its debt, then the market would get freaked out. They'd start to be charged 5, 7, 8% on their debt every year, and that the debt interest payments would cripple the government. But what's happening now is that the government has completely lost all ability to balance the books, as has of most Western democracies worldwide after the pandemic. But still, the market is only requesting 0.2% or something like that to interest rates. So we're seeing the national debt rise to levels I frankly didn't think I would ever see in my lifetime. But the debt interest payment bill from the government is actually going down.
Kate, Fraser mentions that the UK is now in a special club. I think everyone knows that we are in extraordinary circumstances, ultimately, you know, huge sums being spent. But there has been a sense that lots of countries are doing the same. So how do other countries compare to the UK? Is the UK amassing more than most in terms of, you know, which countries are spending less and more and borrowing?
So it's true that all Western countries have been borrowing obscene amounts of money to get through the COVID crisis. You just don't want to be the ugliest baby at the party. But the UK has a real deficit problem. In the first 4 months of this financial year, we have borrowed more money than we did all throughout the financial crisis. Now, it is thought that if we can get back to some kind of normal in 2021, borrowing figures will fall dramatically. We actually did see a few positive signs from the data published by the Office for National Statistics today. They revised downward their projection for June when it turns out we actually borrowed £6 billion less than forecasted because tax revenues have been higher than predicted. So, I mean, I'm really scraping the barrel here, Katie, to find you some positive stats.
But we're not the ugliest.
But, well, we're pretty ugly. But you have to believe that next year will be normal. What if there's a second wave in autumn? What if some of the COVID policy actually just translates to the Conservative government's policy and becomes day-to-day spending? I think if anybody really believes that we're going to get back to the projections that we were seeing in March, which, by the way, still had us borrowing tens of billions of pounds. We were not looking to get the books in order. We have a serious problem on our hands. As Fraser says, nobody knows when interest rates may change. Nobody thinks they're going to change anytime soon. But let's remember what the Bank of England did right at the height of the COVID crisis. It cut interest rates from being at ultra low to now being at rock bottom. They knew that the government could not afford to have them even tick up slightly. So while we can say, you know, it's cheap to borrow, don't worry about it, it does also feel a bit like we're on borrowed time. We just don't know for how long.
Fraser, it's clear that the level of borrowing that we've had cannot be sustained, or at least as a view in some parts of government that cannot be sustained. But how are we expecting this to manifest itself? We know the furlough scheme is being wound down. In Germany, the furlough scheme has been extended. Do you think for all the talk in the Treasury that they are not going to have extensions on these various programmes, events outside of their own control could force them into a situation where they do have to bring back emergency measures?
I certainly think we'll see more borrowing and financial support in the next budget. But it's also striking that the furlough scheme has gone down from 31% of the workforce in the beginning of May to 12% in the beginning of August. So that's quite an encouraging trajectory. I think the Chancellor had been worried that by the time his next budget came along, you'd get, say, 20% of the workforce still on the furlough scheme. He'd have to kick them all off and being then accused of creating mass unemployment. It does seem that they're tapering off the furlough scheme, requiring employers to spend more for people they're furloughed, is leading people to employers to move off that scheme. But the interesting thing is, of course, is what happens if interest rates move away from 0.2%. I understand that the Treasury had a stress test recently where they looked at what would happen if interest rates, if rate of inflation was to go to 1%. By no means high by historic standards. And that it was not a pretty sight. You end up with like tens of billions of pounds having to come away from government spending. So that is how finely balanced things are. At the start of the crisis, actually, it looked as if government borrowing was about to go to 1%. And it was only the quantitative easing programme by the Bank of England. Basically, it's hoovering up almost all of the debt the government issues right now. And that's artificially pushing the borrowing rates to such low levels. How long can they keep this going for? And how long can you be sure that we're going to have interest rates at less than 0.25%? And the moment that changes, I think the government is quite vulnerable.
Kate, if we're looking at living with coronavirus, today we had the announcement that Oldham is being placed under new restrictions. It's not a full lockdown in the sense that the Leicester local lockdown was, but you're not supposed to socialise with anyone outside of your own household. While you have things like this going on, and we expect local lockdowns to continue at least for most of this year, how normal can things be? And what are the Treasury currently offering for those in local lockdown? Do they get specific things?
They're not offering much of anything for people in local lockdown compared to what the nation's being offered. But we haven't got to a point yet where this has really been challenged, because we still do have the furlough scheme. We still have the loans. Businesses have been very, very well supported throughout this. But if all of a sudden your local area can't operate properly and businesses can't be open in a normal way, and let's be honest, they're already not with all the social distancing measures, but it's even harder for a local area to say, well, that's just tough luck and you and your employers are just going to have to sit it out. It's going to be difficult, especially if we don't really know the criteria for what puts an area into lockdown and what brings an area out of lockdown. That's still very, very unclear. So again, you have to ask, will the government be pressured into bringing in specific measures? Or are they almost going to go for more of an American-style system in which the public actually start getting agitated and want to get out of these measures because they're not getting that same kind of generous support? That really is what we saw in America, a very organic process in which the public said, well, if you're not going to support us, we have to return to normal faster. But given all of the criticism that the government got, rightly or wrongly, for acting too late at the beginning of lockdown, you would think they'll be very cautious about this, which is why when people say that COVID is a one-off spending spree, I'm very hesitant to believe that. I would be shocked if we were borrowing the same amounts of money this time next year that we are this year, but I do not think we're going back to normal levels of borrowing or what we've the new normal of sort of the past 3 or 4 years. I just think there's almost no way.
This is actually a very sensitive topic amongst Conservative MPs. They worry that when the fog of COVID lifts, we're going to be left with a British government pretty much on a continental European model, far bigger spending, far bigger taxes, and it's very difficult to ratchet back down and to get back to what was even under the new Labour era. And Britain used to be sort of in the middle ground between the EU and the US when it came to tax and spending levels. What's happening right now is that Boris Johnson hates having to make choices. His cakeism, his pro-having cake and pro-eating it, means that he hates having to say, look, you can either spend this or spend that, but you've got to choose one of them. He wants them both. This was, by the way, his instinct before the crisis. So when the crisis came along, he went all out, going ahead with HS2, for example, to the dismay of most of his cabinet, very expensive promise. And once you've done all these commitments, how really are we supposed to get back to a government of the same size, a tax burden of the same size as Britain has historically been? I actually think that fiscal conservatism could be one of the main casualties of the coronavirus.
I think it was very noticeable once Boris Johnson came into number 10 throughout the 2019 election, and even since, that he has a very pro-market rhetoric. He knows that the private sector is where you generate the money to pay for all the goodies that you dish out through the public sector. The problem, of course, is that the market, the economy, has been put into lockdown for months now, and I don't think that it has been totally understood, or at least not acknowledged really, and certainly not publicly, that when you do something like that, when the economy takes a hit like that, the money stops funneling in. Now, as said, the government's getting slightly more through tax revenue than it thought it would, but it's taken a huge battering. So if you don't allow the private sector to flourish again, you're not going to get the money in to pay for any of this.
Now, an issue that could create more turbulence in the months ahead is the Brexit trade deal. Fraser, today we've heard from both sides that the seventh round of Brexit trade talks have ended with little progress to report. In the statements from Michel Barnier and David Frost on the UK side, it's not so much talking about any progress. Barnier has suggested anything at points that are going backwards, but blaming both sides for why they think it has come to this point that there doesn't at the moment seem to be the basic bones of a deal. Do you think we're going to have no deal by the end of this?
My gut feeling is that we are going to get a deal, and that right now we're going through the same choreography that we did last time. The two sides have talks, they both blame each other for talks not going forward. We would take it right down to the wire, then we do a deal at the 11th hour. That's exactly what happened this time last year, and I think it's how this round of talks will end up too. So that's why I don't place a great deal of importance in what they're saying. I would be astonished, actually, if they both walked away and said, yes, we've got a deal, that's great, let's go for it. And this is why Boris Johnson is keeping to his original Brexit timetable, because he thinks it doesn't matter if you give it another 3 months, 6 months, 1 year, 2 years. You're always going to get a deal at the 11th hour, and only after both sides have made out that they're willing to walk away. By the way, I'd say that I think there's a 60% chance of a deal and 40% chance of no deal. I certainly know a great many Conservatives who would almost prefer that than to making another bunch of concessions, which the Prime Minister, I suspect, will probably do in the end.
Thank you, Fraser. Thank you, Kate. And thank you for listening. Before you go, why not subscribe to The Spectator? For just £12, you can get 12 issues of the magazine delivered to your door, full access to our website, and we'll give you a £20 Amazon gift voucher. Absolutely free. Forget Eat Out to help out. This is the offer people are raving about, or at least that's what the producer to this podcast says. Just go to spectator.co.uk/voucher.